You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This, of course, is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today's date is the 2nd of August, 2026, the early hours of August 2nd. As always, I want to thank my donors, both large and small, for keeping me afloat. My medical bills that my insurance doesn't cover are still substantial, but with your support, of course, I'll get through those. And I appreciate all your assistance in the meantime, as much as I hate asking for money, but it's unfortunate. Regardless, this topic today I've not covered in the past. Pieces of it I have. I've dealt with the myth of the rape of Nanking. I think it was 2 years ago. But now I want to take aim more specifically, and I have to give some background information before we get to it, on the so-called Unit 731, which was allegedly run by the Kwantung Army of Manchuria. A lot of trash history, these YouTube channels, these stupid sites. I think you all know, I've heard of them before. Grunge and Real Clear History and Daily Beast and all these nonsense sites have these attention-grabbing headlines. And they proceed to support the mythology of Japanese behavior in World War II, trying to make the Axis look as evil as possible. Western audiences seem to absolutely require these lurid massacres and tortures, partially because to a great extent, nasty people, but partially because it covers up their own evil. You know, it's been a hobby of mine to go on these videos on YouTube concerning, you know, say Iwo Jima or Tarawa, any of the major battles of World War II against Japan, and I say, you know, you guys fought on the wrong side. The Korean War and the Vietnam War would never have occurred had the U.S. not fought for Stalin. I get them all mad and everything else. Of course, many of them never thought about it that way before, but I want to take aim at Unit 731. Of course, this is in the context of the invasion of Manchuria. And ultimately, I think this is a collective Western progression, projection, I mean, a neurotic projection against Imperial Japan. You can't deny the importance that Manchuria had to the Japanese. Really, since 1906, the Japanese economic presence, Manchuria had really been a very arid, undeveloped place. The Japanese economic presence there had been growing for quite a while. Now, the Treaty of Portsmouth that ended the Russo-Japanese War granted Japan a lease of the South Manchuria Railway, which was the centerpiece of all of this stuff, and the branch of the China Far East Railway. Now, the Japanese claimed that if that were the case, then that treaty implied that control of the railway included all of the rights that China granted to Russia in the earlier treaty of 1896, including absolute administration within the South Manchuria Railway Zone. Of course, railways have to be protected, especially in a China that did not have a central government, that was still in its warlord phase, and especially in places like Manchuria, had zero economic development. Now, the security the Japanese maintained for the trains and the tracks were Japanese regulars. And they frequently operated way outside of the railway area. And this became the core of the Kwantung Army, the army that controlled Manchuria and helped develop it. Chiang Kai-shek was slowly creating a new Chinese government, trying to reassert its authority over the country after two decades of warlord control. And one of the things they said quite arbitrarily was that any treaty between China and Japan was now void. They didn't give a legal reason. They just asserted it. Now, at this point, people from Taiwan, Korea, Japan had settled frontier lands. They opened stores, they began to industrialize parts of China, and they were expelled without compensation, which was already a major provocation. There's a warlord named Zhang Zulin trying to use his warlord army to remove Japanese businesses and concessions in the area. But the Kwantung Army had him assassinated. The Chiang Kai-shek government was, of course, located in Nanking. And there were official Japanese objections and threats to a great extent against the attacks on Japanese nationals within China. Of course, immediately rejected by the Chinese and the useless League of Nations. The 1929 Sino-Soviet conflict over the China East Railroad made tensions even worse. And that led to something called the Mukden Incident. This was an alleged false flag against the railway. Now, my problem with this is that, first of all, that when the regime uses phrases like false flag, you have to wonder, do they reject that concept everywhere else? The Japanese had absolutely no reason to create an incident. As I just said, the Chinese were provoking Japan all over the place. The Mukden incident was a small explosion on a harmless part of the railway that really did very little, but then allegedly was used as a provocation that brought the Japanese to militarily occupy the area permanently. Now, the Soviets destroyed Zhang Zulang's warlord army, bringing the Soviets near the railroad in Manchuria. It also showed how weak the Chinese military was. The Red Army's performance impressed Japan, and this is a decade before Kaohsiung Gol. But Manchuria was essential to Japan's policy throughout East Asia. The Imperial Eastern Region Conferences in 1921-1927 reaffirmed Japan's commitment to be dominant in Manchuria. They were the only power that could create a modern state there. It was the state within Japanese Empire and certainly the most developed state in all of China only when the Japanese were there. But the Red Army had taken action against the Japanese. And by 1930, the Kwantung Army realized they were facing a Red Army that had now become more confident, growing stronger in both quality and quantity. And so Japanese plans to conquer the Northeast were accelerated at this point, culminating in the Battle of Kaohsiung Gol, actually more than one, in 1939, but we're not at that point yet. Chiang Kai-shek, at this point, was not the hero he later became. He was pro-Soviet. He was Stalin's man in China to fight the Japanese. And he tried very with great difficulty to unify at least most of what we call China today. The warlords trying to put their differences away and work with Chiang Kai-shek to absorb Manchuria into this new China. But quite frankly, they didn't have the resources to do it. Only Japan did. The state of Manchukuo may have been a puppet state, but it was a state that was the most advanced, at least economically and medically, which was the whole point of Unit 731. We'll get to that here in a minute. Technically, the Kwantung Army derives from the security forces for the railway. This railway obviously was extremely important. The Kwantung Army essentially was an autonomous force. It was technically subordinate to the imperial headquarters in Tokyo, but its leadership did what they wanted. Quite often, the Kwantung Army acted in direct contravention of the Japanese high command in Tokyo. The claim that they engineered the Mukden incident to permit the full invasion of Manchuria in 1931 is nonsense. They didn't need that as a cause. They had many causes. But it also was an act of insubordination. Tokyo didn't think they were ready for that and had forbidden them to do it. But they did it anyway. There was supposed to be a Chinese attack on the railway, which would have destroyed any chance for development in the area. The warlord Zhang Zuilang's tiny air force was destroyed on the ground, and whatever was left of his army fled their barracks. The only number of men that they needed were about 500 Japanese. They attacked a Chinese garrison of around 10,000. Most of them fled. Two Japanese soldiers were killed, about 500 Chinese were. So it's clear there wasn't going to be any new China under Chiang Kai-shek working under Stalin. Commander of the Kwantung Army was General Shigeru Honjo. Didn't like the idea. He was mostly in Tokyo. He realized that the invasion was done without his permission. But he came to approve the act once it was so successful. There was a so-called Chosen Army of Japan and Korea under Shinjuro Hayashi that sent in reinforcements. It didn't take long, and with minimal casualties, to declare most of Manchuria secure. The Kwantung Army took over the radio broadcasting facilities in October of that year, and they broadcast to the Japanese population. The Japanese population was elated at the victory of the Japanese here. Trying to sway Japanese public opinion in favor of its actions wasn't really hard to do. The provincial forces, that is to say, the warlord forces, there were a few of these, so-called generals, Ding Chao and Li Du and people like that, put up token resistance. They simply didn't have the equipment that the Japanese did. But what was Manchuria to the Japanese? It was a land rich in natural resources. It was seen as a way to overcome the American-engineered Great Depression. This is why it had tremendous public support. Japan, in and of itself, has almost zero natural resources. There are rocks sticking out of the water. The population, maybe, the size of California, maybe twice the population of California at the time. And American sanctions were, to an extent, alleviated by it. The Kwantung Army were considered absolute heroes of Japan, regardless of what Tokyo had to say about them. The key phrase was used that this was a lifeline, the metaphor, that Manchuria was then a crucial, critical element to the Japanese economy. Now, what does this have to do with Unit 731? The accusation, of course, is that Unit 731 did all kinds of nasty and horrible human experiments. It was like Joseph Mengele. And in fact, the accusations simply take the accusations against Mengele just whole cloth, using the same language, the same phrases, proving that it's nonsense. No one seemed to notice any of this, though, until the end of World War II. No Chinese nationalist group noticed any of this, including the rape of Nanking, until after World War II was over. No one seemed to notice this, proving that it didn't happen. It was simply a journalistic creation. Unit 731 was creation of the Kwantung Army in 1936. This is supposed to be a grim reminder of Japan's wartime past, framed as a secret research group accused of all manner of human experimentation and the use of biological weapons in China. This, of course, is either completely nonsensical or totally out of context. But the history surrounding this unit, and it really wasn't Unit 731, that's more of a journalistic term to make it sound more sinister than it really is. But it's mostly something done out of emotion and ideology. And there has been zero objective inquiry into the matter. Unit 731 had an actual name that was not the creation of journalists. It's called the Imperial Japanese Epidemic Prevention and Water Purification Department of the Kwantung Army. Its purpose officially was to prevent disease among troops and local civilians. It didn't matter whether they were Japanese or Manchurian or Manchu. It then expanded later into research on biological and chemical warfare. As we'll talk about here in a minute, they were forced into it. It was headquartered in Pingfang near Harbin, Japanese-occupied Manchuria, and it had a few satellite facilities across northern China. The commander was the Surgeon General Shiryo Ishii. He was a military doctor who saw, before the existence of nuclear weapons, he saw biological weapons as a strategic deterrent against Soviet expansionism. They did do many experiments, not on people. They did many experiments, absolutely necessary ones, and very successful ones, on pathogens such as bubonic plague, anthrax, not the band, the actual pathogen, and cholera. They used regular field trials just like any other country. By the end of the war, that organization had thousands of personnel under its employ, doctors, researchers, and, of course, security. The U.S., of course, claimed that the horrible accusations against it are settled, which by itself is very suspicious. But in Japan, it is the result of great debate. Something that isn't known, but is talked about quite a bit in Japan, is both the Soviet and the Chinese use of biological materials, biological warfare. Japanese wartime survey materials recorded Chinese forces using biological tactics, tossing cholera bacteria into wells. They did this all the time. The Soviets did it on a slightly greater scale. The Chinese used it on a much smaller scale. But biological weapons were something that the Chinese were trying to use. They did it unsuccessfully, but they did use it. This is never mentioned in Western scholarship, and certainly never in Chinese scholarship. The Chinese or the Westerners were to admit any of this, their whole narrative would fall apart. This was one of the things that Unit 731 actually did. They had no choice but to try to do their own research. Japan didn't have a chemical weapons bureau except for here. The Chinese did, and certainly the Soviets did. Now, of course, like any other body, any other country in the world that had any kind of economy at the time, of course, there are going to be questionable practices under the banner of research. The U.S. was chief among the sinners here. But come on, this is a common in an era of total war. American discussions of Unit 731 is this absolute evil. There's a book out called the 731, the Japanese Auschwitz. So you know what they're trying to do with this. The propaganda is identical. Which is really dangerous for them to do, because it's obviously false. We're going to use the exact same terminology from Mengele to Dr. Ishii. This is nothing compared to what the U.S. biological facilities in Armenia are doing today, or in Ukraine today. But most of the discussions here in the West start with moral condemnation, so that automatically distorts everything. They assume the Japanese were evil because they were part of the Axis, and therefore there was no point to understand anything. It's simply a matter of construction from there on in. To believe that the Japanese had any systemic plan to exterminate anybody is nonsensical. And the same thing for Germany, for that matter. Much later. But there's something that should be noted about the Japanese war, was that it was more chaotic and improvised than centrally directed, unlike the German. Don't exaggerate Japanese wartime efficiency. The Japanese military were incapable of any grand designs. Even today, that's not how Japan operates. There were all kinds of improvisation. There were plenty of mistakes made without an overall strategy. Proof of this, of course, was the very fact that the Kwantung Army was completely autonomous and did as it pleased. The U.S. negotiated with this unit after the end of the war, because Ishii's experimental data was extremely useful. Oh, you know, they refused to call Ishii a criminal at this point, because if they did, they couldn't use his material. Yes, he was considered guilty, but not before his material was stolen. Soviets were already interrogating captured Japanese personnel. But even today, the research from Unit 731, which saved many, many lives in the area, still being used in the development of public health, vaccines for better or for worse, cholera, plague, influenza, etc. But as of today, there is no full picture of Unit 731, and Johnson's Law being what it is, because of that, they can say whatever they want, and Johnson's Law has been extremely dominant here. Most of the files were destroyed at the end of the war, either deliberately or indeliberately. Now, after the Japanese surrender, Soviets did what they always did. They created a show trial, in this case, the Khabarovsk show trial. And it was done precisely as any other show trial was. It wasn't a trial by any means. The participants were guilty even before it started. There were hearings of 12 Japanese Kwantung Army officers and medical staff. And that show trial is exclusively the ammunition that the Western world uses in condemning Imperial Japan, which means it was no evidence whatsoever. These took place in 1940, very end of 1949. Khabarovsk in the Russian Far East is a small city, an industrial city. But the truth of the matter is, Unit 731 saved thousands of lives. Now, even in the Soviet case, in these fake trials, the men involved were sentenced to fairly short terms in Siberian labor camps. Now, even a short term can kill you, especially in Siberia. But the sentences went from 2 to 25 years. And the lower-end sentences were done in exchange for information. There were plenty of Japanese that were given immunity to condemn others. So much was stolen. Even after the fall of Berlin, the U.S. were carrying wheelbarrows full of patents out and use them to create, you know, the postmodern American industrial and post-industrial economy. The American and Soviet biological weapons program was taken directly from this. Now, here's a stupid statement from a so-called bioethics expert, Jing Baoning. And here's what he said. And this is very typical of the Western so-called scholarship in the area, talking about the Sho trial. Despite its strong ideological tone and many obvious shortcomings, such as the lack of international participation, the trial established beyond reasonable doubt the Japanese army had prepared and deployed bacteriological weapons, and the Japanese researchers had conducted cruel experiments on living human beings. However, the trial, together with the evidence presented to the court and its major findings, which have proved them remarkably accurate, was dismissed as communist propaganda and totally ignored in the West until the 1980s. Almost every sentence of that is completely false. The lack of international participation was not relevant. Soviet Sho trials were never done with international participation. They were accepted anyway. A Sho trial can't establish anything, let alone beyond reasonable doubt. It wasn't the Japanese army. It was the really autonomous army of Manchuria. And just like all Sho trials, especially Nuremberg, it was also simply another Soviet Sho trial. They used torture and isolation to get the testimony that they wanted. They were not permitted any kind of defense. These weren't trials. Nothing like Nuremberg or the ICC or the Tokyo trials, any of these, you can't call them trials in the normal Western sense of the term. You had to prove yourself innocent, which was impossible because you had no access to any of the information anyway. And you were tortured into saying what they wanted you to say. It was the lack of severe punishments, though, that were interesting. And it's because, and precisely because, Unit 731 was a very positive thing. These weren't trials. They established nothing. Japanese defendants had no representation whatsoever. Typical Soviet-style stuff. The U.S. needed to justify its mass slaughter of Japanese civilians and its bombing of total destruction of Japan from top to bottom. And this was one way that they justified it. The American National Institute for Defense Studies has tons of these records. None of them seem to show any concern with human experimentation, but of things of great scientific value. Several have been sued for disclosure, but until very recently, only a small portion has been opened. The secrecy is the problem because it fuels exaggeration and all kinds of maudlin, almost poetic talk about how evil the Japanese were, how evil the Axis was. Because the records were hidden, it's easier for the Chinese and the Americans to claim whatever they wanted to say, as per Johnson's law. Some Japanese claim that transparency is the only way to stop that, but transparency doesn't mean very much, because the media is only going to report what suits its interests. The truth is, the Japanese government was saving Chinese and Manchus with medical care that was unavailable anywhere else. The epidemic prevention and control initiatives in China saved thousands of lives. Japan, as they industrialized the area, build hospitals, some of the highest quality on the planet, maybe outside of the British, but they were done in the British model. The population exploded. Chinese immigrants poured into the place, even though it was a Japanese concession. And this is one of the reasons that, A, the Soviets wanted to destroy it, and B, Chiang Kai-shek wanted it to become a part of China, just without Japanese control. Manchuria was a place that plagues broke out all the time. The Great Manchurian Plague of 1910 and the other one in 1911 occurred maybe every 5 years. In this case, every 10 years, another one in 1920, 1922. It's possible that this plague was the result of either a Soviet or a Republic of China attack. And this is why Unit 731 came into existence. It was a countermeasure against this stuff, among other things. Contrary to all the nonsense about it, Unit 731 did very well to protect Japan and Manchukuo, the other name for Manchuria. And one of its great victories was the development of a mobile water purification system. It's actually a vehicle, since the water in Manchuria was undrinkable. And they developed methods of bacteria-free clean water to save soldiers, really on both sides, but especially for the Japanese. And of course, the Chinese then took credit for all this later on. So when Japan lost the war, which was a tremendous loss for humanity, Soviets found out that captured Unit 731 members had been investigating and spying on Soviet biological warfare methods. So, 1947, there was a secret meeting between the U.S. and the Soviets held in Tokyo to hand over Shiro Ishii, who was being captured by the Americans. And the U.S. refused to hand him over. They allowed him to be given immunization, immunized him, no pun intended, in exchange for valuable scientific information. But we don't know exactly what that was. Not only medical information, of course, but his understanding of Soviet biological processes in the Weapons Department, the Army, and the Air Force. There were many interrogations and reports on Unit 731, and none of them ever exposed any war crimes or crimes against humanity, so-called. The first one, you have the Sanders Report, the first major report on the issue. It was done as a joint Soviet-American venture, 1945. It does not mention human experimentation. But it does mention the Soviet use and production of biological weapons. 1946, there was another one, the Arvo Thompson Report. Again, no mention of human experimentation. And then, of course, the Show Trial. So trial with no defense attorneys of any kind. And then years later, in 2006, IWG report. Then another in 2007, still zero evidence for war crimes being uncovered. Under torture, the Japanese, the Show Trial, testified killing 3,000 people with experiments. But there is no physical evidence backing this up. This was done under torture, of course. It was part of the anti-Japanese propaganda, which continues today, especially today, where Japanese testimonials in the 1956, the Fushan War Criminals Camp, they're not reliable. It was the Soviets and Chiang Kai-shek's China. I mean, these were the people who attacked Japan with biological weapons in the first place. That's why Unit 731 came into existence. People were talking about the biological warfare by the Soviets and the new China under Chiang Kai-shek, but nothing concerning Unit 731. The Japanese were way behind on all of this. Some of the fake stories here come from a work of fiction, a novel, Tsuyoshi Morimura. in the 1980s, it was a novel called The Devil's Feast, sometimes it's translated as The Devil's Gluttony. He was a Japanese communist, and it was kind of historic fiction, you would call it, about Unit 731. It was serialized in a Japanese Communist Party magazine, and it was using, as these false stories always use, either manipulated photographs or, in this case, miscaptioning, a relevant plague prevention photo. This was a big seller in the Far East. It's a work of fiction, and really meant to be historic fiction. But over time, the fictional novel somehow was considered truth, nonfiction. Again, Johnson's Law being how it is, this stuff was not written in English. The Chinese Communist government, under Mao, they created this Unit 731 Memorial Hall within China. And all the propaganda from the show trials came from this. They had these wax figures of Japanese victims. All these photographs of victims of human experiments. And the photos themselves are neutral. They're, you know, Japanese doctors, you know, immunizing children, for example, or in a hospital. And they're, you know, the caption says they're being poisoned. And you don't know any better when you're looking at this for the first time, especially if you're under the propaganda messages to begin with. And all of these were used at the show trials. And remember, you know, as I've said many other times, Nuremberg was a Soviet show trial. It took all previous Soviet show trials, kangaroo courts, concerning the Germans in the camps, as absolute fact. They were not open to debate. So one show trial used so-called evidence from other show trials as absolutely certain. That's how fraudulent the Nuremberg show trial was, the kangaroo court was. Unit 731 was nothing other than a plague and epidemic prevention unit. And only later did it become a means to counter Soviet and Chinese biological warfare. They treated patients either from naturally born or deliberate epidemics. Later on, they actually moved into the treatment of frostbite. One of the first, the Soviets had done it, the Russians had done it prior to that, worked on frostbite. And then afterwards, bacteria-free water. Japan was way behind the Soviets and the Americans when it came to that kind of chemical defense technology. No question that it was the Soviets and the Chinese that attacked Japan with biological warfare first. Did Japanese use them? No, they simply didn't have them. They weren't that advanced yet. But even if they did, it would have to be later than 1939, long after the Soviets had used them. Don't forget, the Americans used yellow phosphorus at Iwo Jima to flush the Japanese out of their caves. Now, that's not exactly, you know, it's not like using, sarin gas or even white phosphorus, but it was still chemical warfare. So all these people have is a fictional work, an actual work of fiction, The Devil's Gluttony, and show trials. That's all they have. Yeah, there are going to be testimonies all over the place, but they are completely meaningless. There's no photos that prove any of these abuses. Any source condemning Unit 731 come from these testimonies. Of course, there were pathological experiments using Japanese soldiers and students and everything else. But that was how it was done. That was done that way everywhere. They weren't abducting innocent people and killing them. The worst case scenario was the use of death row convicts, as the U.S. did. That would probably be the worst thing you can accuse them of. But I really don't care about that. No normal person could. Japan saves both Han Chinese and Manchus from epidemics in China and Manchuria. Manchuria became a prosperous, industrialized state. It was a state-owned industry. All demonization of Unit 731, especially these photos, are either fake or completely misrepresented. There's one of the most famous photos, the doctor performing an autopsy on a female body, which wasn't even at Unit 731. But it's one of the Japanese victims killed by Chinese at the Jinan incident in 1928. But these are the so-called plague photos that were used all the time. Had nothing to do with Unit 731, but how would anyone know? In China, especially in Manchuria, but in much of China at the time, water was very contaminated. So the Japanese infantry needed a purified water system wherever they went. And one of the great discovery or inventions of Dr. Ishii was the water filter model. He uses a filtration cylinder. I mean, it's already been developed in Japan during the Taisho era, but it was adapted for military use. And it was called the Ishii type water filter. The type 98 was designed for more or less greater, you know, practicality. It used 6 filtration cylinders, 330 millimeters in length. And there was a simultaneously rotating internal brush and filter tubes, essentially cartridges, scraping the surfaces to allow for repeated use. And the filtration performance was far higher than anything else on the market at the time. And this led to Japanese sanitation units all over China doing regular water quality inspections. You see them everywhere. One of the worst aspects of the Chinese mainland was that the water was terrible. Other photos use the Manchurian Great Plague of 1910 and are said to be the result of Japanese years later, you know, Unit 731. But that's typical. That's stock and trade of this nonsense. Now, frostbite was interesting. So the main Unit 731 office was located in Manchuria, of course, northeastern China. Frostbite was common. Frostbite, as you mostly probably know, it's a deadly serious injury caused by exposure to extreme cold, where skin, underlying tissues, you know, fingers, toes, nose, ears, etc., they actually freeze. Sometimes amputation is required because the tissue's dead. It's a condition known either as gangrene or necrosis. Asato Yusamura, who was a scientist at Unit 731, investigated the cause of frostbite and was researching a tolerance variance to cold among different ethnic groups. There he did experiment on people, but it was a very positive thing. He had no choice. The Soviets did something similar, but they were not nearly as advanced as the Japanese were. They weren't using their knowledge of frostbite to hurt anybody. Quite the contrary. They weren't using their knowledge of biological warfare to hurt anybody. No evidence has been found. The national archives that have been released show individual interrogation records of Unit 731 personnel, including Ishii himself, including formerly top secret documents, confirming that Lieutenant General Ishii wrote about the results of his experiments roughly around June 1947, handing them over to the U.S. military. There was an investigation working group, the IWG. I mentioned the IWG report. This was formed in 1999 under the Clinton administration to investigate the Japanese war crimes, the German too, but Japanese in particular. They were desperately searching for documentation, corroborating that human experimentation had taken place, atrocities like the comfort women issue in Korea, but no evidence was found. tried to find documents that Allied POWs were subject to German experiments at Mukden, present-day Shenyang, the internment facility. Whether balloon bombs from Japan were used to spread biological agents. But germ warfare was not being considered at the time. There are 100,000 pages classified documents held by the U.S. concerning Unit 731, and that's been, almost all of them have been released by now. There is zero evidence that human experiments were being done. But these developed after the war. These were fabrications as a means of neurotic projection. Yes, the National Archives have released the bulk of the 100,000 pages of the Kwantung Army Epidemic Prevention and Water Supply Department, otherwise known as Unit 731, and there is nothing that can... Of course, it's going to be occasional irregularity, but they were not systematic. There were errors. Certainly nothing like the Soviets and the Americans were doing. Beyond that, there also was, early on, the Kwantung Army Horse Epidemic Prevention Depot. So military horses were still a big deal at the time. And that was merged within the Army Epidemic Prevention and Water Supply Department, hence Unit 731. The Chinese have a safe water supply, at least in that part of the world at that time, because of the Japanese, and God knows how many lives were saved as a result. Of course, the Japanese had, in the interior, their soldiers needed clean water. It's a shame they didn't have that at Iwo Jima, because they were drinking water that was almost, you know, half sulfur. And yet they still outfought the U.S., at a 100-to-1 disadvantage, until, of course, they simply ran out of ammunition. You know, Japan, even though they're essentially rocks sticking out of the water, you still have topsoil, you still, in certain parts of it, forest growing in the mountains, multiple layers of soil that allow rainwater to be naturally filtered, hygienic groundwater springing up all over the country. This was not natural. This was something that was created. The snow that falls on Mount Fuji takes about 30 years to melt, so there was always this constant flow of groundwater. The Japanese landed in Manchuria, there was no greenery whatsoever. It was essentially yellow dust, a little bit of grass growing on the topsoil, essentially part of the Gobi Desert. There was no way that any greenery could ever form there. But go to Google Earth. Look at the area. It's still green. In an area mostly red and yellow desert. Wherever the Japanese army was stationed, the Japanese planted millions of trees. Now, under Mao, many trees were torn down to create their backyard pig iron, but not so much in Manchuria. The continent, or at least that part of the continent, was mostly loess, that sediment of clay, sand, and silt. Securing water is actually very important for the military. That's why they needed to implement disease control measures. It's for, very obvious reasons. Of course, they had to conduct research on countermeasures against bacteria of all kinds. The first-class material on this work, epidemiology, the most advanced in the world at this time, came out of this unit. This is why the U.S. seized the research materials and used them after the war. Some of this stuff is still being used. The continent in the late 20s, sorry, the time of the invasion, 1931-1936, Manchuria was a hotbed of plague, infectious disease all over the place. The local Chinese people, also local Manchurian people, were treated for the first time ever. Somehow their vaccination program, and that vaccination was very different from the vaccination we talk about in the West today, was twisted into a story of human experimentation. The West is doing the same thing about the Chinese in Xinjiang, in Western China. illness was the norm in Manchuria before the Japanese got there. But the fact that Momura's book is used as nonfiction, even though it's actual novel, is contemptible. The Soviet Union declared war on Japan in 1945, violating their own treaty. They cut the telephone lines to the Soviet embassy in Japan before declaring war. So now the Japanese were fighting Chiang Kai-shek and the Eighth Route Army, as well as the Soviet Army. And this is at the end of the war, where really the only functional Japanese unit was in Manchuria. Tokyo Tribunal, 1948, Ishii was granted immunity. Again, no pun intended. This is something that Douglas MacArthur was very interested in as well. On the other hand, in the Soviet Union, Unit 731, those people were deemed war criminals. The war crime trials there. And a few were sentenced to death, and those were usually former generals. Senju Atyagaki, Kawane Matsui, Kenji Duhara, Hideki Tojo, of course, and Kiriyamoto. It's an absolute historical outrage to believe that Unit 731 was anything but a positive development. But put it into a YouTube search engine and see what you get. See the crap that comes out. Now, I've been over the Nanking incident. It's extremely irritating. There's really one book, Iris Chang's The Rape of Nanking, The Forgotten Holocaust of World War II, which came out in 97. I remember when that came out on basic books. She chooses her words carefully. She deliberately used the word Holocaust. The Japanese answer to that, which is not in English, is called What Really Happened in Nanking, The Refutation of the Common Myth. One of the reasons that there was no cause for the Japanese to stage any kind of false flag, but the Chinese were attacking the Japanese all over the place. They didn't need to invent any kind of false flag. Chinese soldiers would shoot people, civilians, Chinese or Japanese settlers, and blame the Japanese occupiers for it. New York Times, again, hardly a Japanese propaganda outlet, not even a reliable source, published an article in 1938 called Ex-Chinese Officers Among U.S. Refugees. Colonel and his aides admit blaming the Japanese for crimes in Nanking. Let me read from it. The ex-Chinese officers, in the presence of Americans and other foreigners, confessed looting in Nanking, and also that one night they dragged girls out from the refugee camp into the darkness, the next day blamed Japanese soldiers for any kind of attack. And the American professors who had protected those former Chinese officers realized that the officers themselves were involved in wrongdoing. They were seriously embarrassed. Of course, Chang didn't mention these, or probably didn't even know about them. Sudo writes more generally about the situation. Remember, that Nanking's population was about 200,000. That was according to Europeans and some Americans who were there at the time. 8 days after its fall, that Christmas Eve, it was still 200,000. No one indicated any vast decrease in the population. And yet the claim is 300,000 people in the city were murdered within the boundaries of Nanking. Now it's true, Chinese troops took off their uniforms, mingled with the civilian population, and the minute they did that, they became unlawful combatants. They were not protected by the regulations concerning the laws and customs of war, the Hague Convention, No Chinese military personnel inside the city walls ever surrendered to the Japanese. Even the Tokyo trials, no one accused Japanese troops of having killed POWs. There were no deliberate murders of POWs. There wasn't the American side, though. Japanese were accused of murdering 7,000 people a day. That is to say, 300,000 people over a period of 6 weeks, according to the man. But according to the, quote, deadly reports of serious injuries to civilians, the only killing witnessed by a European or American in Nanking was one lawful execution. In other words, an execution done after a trial, an actual trial, not a Soviet-style trial. Now, these reports were issued on a daily basis and submitted to the Japanese embassy in Nanking. And these are completely parallel. They're corroborated by data gathered from the testimonies of European, American, and Chinese residents in the city, as well as Japanese military records. So there's alleged massacre of 300,000 in a city of 200,000 with no witnesses. And the Japanese Field Army reports do report the killing of 12,924 Chinese soldiers who were prisoners or remnants of the defeated army. But these were men who were no longer POWs, actually, but had taken off their uniforms and were attacking as alleged civilians. Now, that 12,000, that was a recorded, allegedly recorded, carried out in two incidents involving just two units, the Yamada Detachment, and those thought to be soldiers in civilian clothing in the International Safety Zone. Now, that 12,000 has a lot of problems with it. That's something, you know, a minimal figure used. But the field reports concerning them really can't be found anymore. 12,921. Some places, you know, the Japanese will say, yeah, we'll give you that. There's not a whole lot of evidence for it. Two units over a very short period of time. That these are Chinese soldiers. It wasn't obvious that they were POWs. And many of them, the Japanese had gone within the safety zone to find soldiers who had taken their uniforms off. People coming up with these are not exactly objective observers. A lot of it comes from a book that was published at the time called What War Means, Japanese Military Atrocities in China. The Reverend Minor Seal Bates and George Fitch. Now, they use pseudonyms. It was edited by Timpersley. The point was to impress upon the reader the horrors of war, allegedly by disinterested parties, European and American residents of Nanking. But who was Timperley? He was an advisor to the Nationalist Government's Ministry of Information. Reverend Bates, the Christian missionary who taught at the University of Nanking, was also an advisor to the Ministry of Information. And Mrs. Fitch was a close friend of Chiang Kai-shek's wife. So it was propaganda. It was published by the Counterintelligence Division of the Nationalist Military of Information International Propaganda Section. Temporarily was paid by the Ministry of Information for editing the book. So you can't use this as evidence for this so-called 13,000 figure. Now, yes, later on, Chiang Kai-shek was a hero against communism and created, under military rule, a very prosperous Taiwan. At this period of time, he was no hero. He was aligned with Joseph Stalin against Japan. In fact, he was involved in trying to get the Soviets to attack China to get rid of the Japanese. That Chiang's cooperation with China, with Stalin, contributed significantly to Japan's defeat during World War II, and especially the defeat of the Manchurian Army. The Soviets and Chiang Kai-shek were committed to defeat the Axis powers. So war had compelled two men who had every reason to distrust each other to overcome a long history of mutual suspicion and animosity and find common ground that included Mao. Stalin pressured the Communist Party of China, Mao himself, to accept Chiang as their leader. Now, of course, you would think that the nationalist government under Chiang, the Communist Party under Mao or Chiang, would have pushed the Nanking Massacre. They would have talked about it all the time, but they never mentioned it. All the key documents talking about alleged Japanese war crimes of the era, they don't mention it either. No press conference was ever called in this era to announce this massacre in Nanking, despite it being an international city. It was shaped by wartime propaganda, largely in the U.S., and only secondarily by Chinese authorities at the time. And, of course, it was the Japanese invasion of Manchuria that created Unit 731. And it was because the Chinese warlords and nationalists were defeated that Chiang went to Stalin. The Stalin used biological agents, and therefore Unit 731 had to come into existence. Remember, when Nanking fell in December 1937, Japanese forces entered the city that was surrounded by a wall. They were followed by 150 newspaper reporters from around the world. Peace restored in Nanking. Not a single reporter said he had seen anything like a massacre or any bad behavior from the Japanese whatsoever. The Nanking Safety Zone was established by foreigners, and residents, as well as foreigners, were accommodated within the zone. The Japanese supported this idea. Again, population, but all those asked, around 200,000, remained the same throughout the war. 1938, the population increased to 150,000. So where are these 300,000 victims? Within the safety zone, street stalls were opened, some economic growth could be found. The Japanese were found there paying for their meals and being normal guys. The war was over for them. They had no interest in starting to shoot people. Mao Zedong never mentioned a Nanking massacre during his entire lifetime. He may have criticized the Japanese forces for their sieges and their failures because he exaggerated the Chinese communists' successes against Japan, but never talked about their desire for annihilation of the Chinese or ever any Nanking massacre. The International Propaganda Office of the Chinese Nationalist Government held 300 press conferences almost daily during the year the battle in Nanking took place. 35 or so foreign correspondents were there each time. They talked about alleged atrocities, but no Nanking massacre was ever mentioned or even alluded to. I've said many times before, the photographs are ridiculous. For people who don't know the details of the war, the brain tends to fill in detail using information from the caption. So the famous pictures of Japanese troops killing POWs, except the pictures are men wearing Chinese uniforms. But Johnson's Law suggests that people don't know that. So whether they're doctored or not, the caption is all that really matters. And it's a very important form of propaganda. And it comes to this very notion that if a novice is, or someone who doesn't really know, even people who do know, looking at just a picture of something, someone being shot, well, I don't know the difference between a Japanese or a Chinese nationalist uniform in a black and white picture. But the caption will say something's happening, and the brain will then reinterpret the picture according to it. One of the reasons I say that there was no reason for any Mukden incident, the false flag allegedly done by the Japanese to justify the invasion, is that the Chinese were constantly provoking. Chinese, well, they had a small air force, nationalist air force was fairly small, of course, Some warlord parties had a very small one, too. They were pretty, you know, primitive. And the Japanese were building, of course, some of the best in the world. The Chinese planes had bombarded both Japanese and French private concessions, killing civilians. The exact number was 1,021. Japan had asked Germany in November to mediate a peaceful solution, but Chiang Kai-shek refused any ceasefire. Chiang demanded that Nanking be defended to the last man, but disobeying his orders, they retreated and moved its capital to Chongqing. The Japanese never violated the safety zone. And really, the safety zone leaders was run by a committee from different parts of Northern Europe. They estimated, of course, the population to be about 200,000, 250,000 at the most, when a few refugees were taken into consideration. Commander Matsui Iwane issued an appeal of conditional surrender to the Chinese army, but he was ignored. Again, all this was done under the watchful eye of foreign media. The London Times, there were many others. Chicago Daily News, especially Archibald Steele, was there. They took pictures of bodies and everything, but it wasn't clear who they were or why they were there. It was a war. And when they used, you know, misleading pictures, other major U.S. newspapers just copy it. When the Japanese tried to find the Chinese who had taken their uniforms off and trying to set themselves, you know, pretend to be civilians, hiding in the safety zone, which was against the law, the North China Daily News said that this was the beginning of genocide. They were hunting them down to slaughter them. That's simply not true. Iris Chang's book, and a lot of others that simply copied from her. And by the way, I didn't mention this. Iris Chang killed herself not that long ago. And in her suicide note, she, you know, did the CO2 thing in her car, in her garage. And her suicide note talked about being hounded by the CIA. Now, I'm not sure why. She doesn't give a whole lot of detail. But she said, the reason I'm killing myself here is because only in killing myself will I finally be free of the CIA tales and their hounding, whatever else. With, you know, she didn't give detail, but something was wrong. This was no hallucination. So she was used by the regime and had lost her usefulness. There was no Nanking massacre. Unit 731 was a good thing, not a bad thing. The ridiculous notion of the Japanese killing 7,000 people each day, 300,000 over 6 weeks, is absolute garbage. The Tongzhou incident, which was in July 1937, again, another one of these deliberate provocations. 3,000 Chinese soldiers ambushed the Japanese in their barracks. They proceeded to raid Japanese shops, inns, private homes. About between 200 and 300 Japanese residents of Tongzhou were slaughtered. The civilians who survived fled to the barracks seeking refuge there. And many Chinese, as well as of course, foreigners who were there, media were there, condemned this Chinese unit for doing this. The Allies in the Tokyo trials absolutely forbade any mention of the Tongzhou massacre in the courtroom. So why the hell did the Chinese, did the Japanese have to create any false flags whatsoever with things like this? Now, of course, this was a year after the invasion, but they had done plenty of this beforehand. Chinese were constantly attacking Japanese, Manchu, pro-Chinese people, pro-Chinese who were benefiting from Japanese economic development prior to the invasion of the area. They were there to rescue Japanese settlers who had done nothing wrong. And of course, Chiang had omitted all of this from her book. Tanggu, Tianjin, massacres were done of Japanese people all over the place. And even still, the Japanese tried to resolve the issue peacefully, but failed. The Japanese wanted a peace conference scheduled in Shanghai for August 9th, but it never took place. The Chinese nationalist forces killed Navy sub-lieutenant Oyama Isao that very day. Another seaman, Saito Yozo. They were doing this all the time. It wasn't just Japanese living in Manchuria prior to the full-scale invasion, but also Japanese living in places, you know, open city. Keep in mind, there was all kinds of open-door treaties. You had foreigners and foreign media all over the place. The Japanese government were constantly protesting. They were protecting their own citizens. So the Imperial Marines landed 4,000 in Shanghai to protect the lives and property of Japanese citizens, among others, including British, French, and Germans. All of these were later condemned as slaughters by the Japanese Imperial Marine Corps, or the Naval Landing Force. Of course, none of this was found in any of the books that were copying Chiang's Rape of Nanking. In fact, Chiang went so far as to say that Nanking's population was 600,000, not 200,000 when the city fell, which is utter nonsense. It was 600,000 under the Chinese communists, you know, a generation later, maybe. But it's absolutely absolute nonsense. The entire thing is nonsense. The Western world seems absolutely obsessed, and I mean that in a psychological way. I'm not using it as an insult. They seem to need these massacres and atrocities, especially when their own forces were guilty of actual atrocities. These atrocities were being developed in the Western mind as the British and American Air Forces were slaughtering Japanese civilians. That was the whole purpose. There was no question about it. It was official doctrine. The Allied position was to force the Japanese surrender by slaughtering civilians in huge numbers until the emperor surrendered. And, of course, it worked. People take their information from the Daily Beast or Real Clear History or Forgotten History or the Grunge, these pseudo-intellectual drivel channels. Well, those people don't make history, and those people don't matter. Liberal opinion didn't even mention any of this until the second atomic bombing was exposed. Japan had the right, due to its advanced state, its successes, to unify East Asia against the colonial powers, due to its superiority in terms of military and science and industry. Japan had a right to Manchuria, not just because of its ability to develop it, but because of Western sanctions and the terrible condition of its public health. The Japanese were right. But as always, the West was wrong, fighting for Stalin, making the wars in Korea and Vietnam inevitable. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your support. And I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.